You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
So, this weekend, Donald Trump became the asshole he's always been. Again. This morning, as I sit down to record the top of this week's show, evidence of the racist asshole piece of shit the president has always been is on the cover of my New York Times. Trump tells freshman congresswomen to go back to the countries they came from. President Trump said on Sunday that a group of four minority congresswomen feuding with Speaker Nancy Pelosi should go back to the countries they came from rather than loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States how to run the government. Wrapped inside that insult, which was widely established as a racist trope, was a factually inaccurate claim, the New York Times continues. Only one of the lawmakers was born outside the country. Wrapping a racist attack around a lie by screaming, go back to where you came from, at three people who are from here and one person whose family immigrated here, you know, like every American family that isn't a Native American family, and like two of Donald Trump's three wives, you might be tempted to call that peak Trump. But if we've learned anything over the last 3 years, it's that worse is yet to come. Trump's tweets and the whole fucking Trump administration is like a giant circle jerk in a frat house. Worse is always coming. And it's less peak Trump than it is Valley Trump, a disgusting new low. You could call it Mariana Trench Trump, but that makes it sound like you're talking about Donald Trump's future fourth wife. I would unpack Trump's attacks on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who was born in New York, Rashida Tlaib, who was born in Michigan, Ayanna Pressley, who was born in Ohio, and Ilhan Omar, who emigrated to this country from Sudan. And all of whom, by the way, were elected to Congress because their constituents wanted them to help run this country. And all of whom, unlike the president, were elected by majorities. But, you know, this broke over the weekend, and if you've been paying attention, and I think most of my listeners pay attention, you've experienced the outrage, you've already heard the president's remarks dissected and condemned, well, condemned by everybody, except people who have R's next to their names, who continue to be as silent about the president's racist remarks as they are complicit in the president's racist racism. But I gotta say, all of this coming from a man whose mother was an unskilled immigrant, a maid, and whose grandfather fled to the United States from Germany to avoid military service. Doesn't that sound familiar? And who didn't speak English when he got here. All of this coming from a man with four children who were born to immigrant mothers in the United States, just like three of the four congresswomen that he is attacking. Well, it had its intended effect. His racist tweets are designed to pit Americans against each other and fire up his racist base, but they also blew immigrant detention centers, our concentration camps, off the front pages. And that was the point. That was the goal. The tweets are meant to divide and distract us, but as Rachel Maddow says, don't just talk about what he tweets, talk about what he does. And the most appalling thing he's doing is caging kids, and adults too, in the most appalling conditions, separating children from their parents. Nazis used boxcars to transport Jews to concentration camps, not enough room to lay down, and this was considered one of the big Nazi crimes, packing people into boxcars, not enough room to lay down, no toilets, roasting in the heat, freezing in the cold, nothing to drink, treated like animals. Looking at the pictures coming out of the Border Patrol detention facilities this weekend with Mike Pence touring, some people object to calling them concentration camps, but look at those pictures. If you don't want to call them concentration camps, maybe we should just start calling them chain link boxcars. How do we sleep at night with this man in the White House and children in cages? You know, those four congresswomen, they were feuding with Nancy Pelosi because they want to push back harder and do more to fight Trump. Tlaib, Congresswoman Tlaib, famously said she wants to impeach the motherfucker, which is what I've wanted for a long time, which I think every decent American has wanted since he put his fucking disgusting short-fingered hand on that Bible at his inauguration. It's time to impeach the motherfucker already. It's time to lock him up. I am, like all decent Americans, on the side of the four congresswomen that Trump attacked, not just in defending them from this vicious bullshit racist attack, but in agreeing with them that it is time, past time, to impeach the motherfucker. All right, coming up on today's show, on both the Magnum and the Micro, we have delightful cartoonist Erica Moen in to share some summer sex toy recommendations to help all of us take our minds off, briefly, the political nightmare that we are currently living through. And on the Magnum, the subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. Twice as long, more calls, more guests, no ads. We have more questions, more of everything. All that on today's show, coming right up. Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk in your own home, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. And right now, use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Do not wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E. Want to save money, save the planet, and look good while you're doing it? It doesn't get any better than ThredUp, the largest online consignment and thrift store. Shop over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off estimated retail. Go to thredup.com/savage for an extra 30% off your first order. That's THREDUP.com/savage, threadup.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own, and to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage.
Dan, I have a relationship question for you. I am a progressive bisexual feminist, happily married, living on the East Coast. And my lovely, uber conservative, evangelical Christian family who lives in the Midwest, I'm going to go see them. And my lovely sister-in-law wants to have a Bible study on our way there, or a book reading, she said. She said, oh, let's have a book club. So I was like, oh, I'd sure do a book club. Yes, let's read a book. Let's do a book. That sounds great. Well, come to find out, with my sister-in-law and my other two sisters, turns out it's a Bible study about biblical womanhood, meaning that it's going to be a biblical study, about how, like, you can't be a feminist. You need to submit and, like, do all this stuff and, like, wear makeup and dresses and all kind of stuff like that. And I just want to know how I can buy it. Bow out of this gracefully without offending her, because shit would hit the fan if I offended her, her ideals, or attacked her Christianity. And I really just want to go there while I'm visiting my family and have a good time and not have to be paranoid about being attacked for who I am.
So your sister is organizing a little bit of Bible study and being an underhanded twat about it. We're going to have a little book club. We're all going to read a book, The Celestine Prophecy, The Towering Inferno. No, we're going to read the Bible and have a little conversation about biblical womanhood. So your sister is proselytizing. She is having a little book club, having a little Bible study while you're home, with the express purpose of communicating to you and other women who fall short of her standard of biblical womanhood that there's something wrong with them and you. That whoever you are right now, whatever you believe right now, you're broken and damaged and deficient, and here is the standard that you are falling short of. And we're going to have a little conference. We're going to have a little talk about that. We're all going to sit around the living room and chat about, by implication, what's wrong with you. Be offended. That's offensive. You don't have to be intentionally rude. You don't have to lean into rudeness. You don't have to tell your sister to take her Bible and shove it up her twat and go fuck herself. But you can say to your sister, I am not interested in Bible study. I'm familiar with the Bible. I was raised in the same family that you were raised in. This is not a mystery. I've heard the good news of the risen Lord, and I don't give a fuck. And so I will go see a movie. I will go for a walk. I will go for a run. I will go to the gym. I will sit in the kitchen and read The Celestine Prophecy while you guys sit in the living room and yak your heads off about biblical womanhood. Hold yourselves to the standard that you believe that you yourself should be held to. But I'm not signing up for this. I'm not 9 years old. I can't be forced to go to Sunday school anymore. Love you. I want you to be the woman that you want to be. You have to allow me to be the woman I am. And if we're going to come to blows about that, if we're going to have a shit fit and a fight about that, that's on you. Because I'm not telling you that you can't have your Bible study. I'm just telling you that you can't force me to come to it. And if your sister shits her pants, she moved her bowels. She did that. And that is not on you. But this idea that when someone engages in a passive-aggressive act designed to scold us about our identities, about who we are, about not being believers, about whatever else, that we have to twist ourselves into pretzels to avoid offending them when they're the ones who've done the offensive thing, that is bullshit. Push back against that. Don't fall for that. Have this fight. You may need to have this fight just this one time, and it may ruin this family get-together, but in the future, they'll know not to pull this shit on you. Because they'll be ruining future family get-togethers. They will know that that is a consequence of trying to manipulate you into a room to yell at you about being a feminist, about being bisexual, about whatever else you are that they disapprove of or they don't think jibes with a concept of womanhood cooked up by a bunch of nomads in a desert with stanky taints thousands of years ago. Fuck them. Fuck that. Speak up. Let them get angry because what they're doing should make you angry.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 29-year-old gay man, and I'm currently dating a 50-year-old. We've only been on a few dates so far. I have stayed the night at his place a few times before. I have dated an older man before. The longest relationship that I've ever had was with someone 16 years older than me. We started dating when I was 22, and we're together about 5 years. The issue now is that I think that the guy I'm seeing now is kind of very quickly developing strong feelings for me, and I'm not the type of person to develop those strong feelings so early on. Now that I'm older, I'm starting to really think about things like, if I get into a long-term relationship with someone, am I going to outlive them for 20 years? Or is the sex going to dry up in 10 years when I am not ready for it to? So what should I do? Should I just keep going as is? Should I break up with him now?
You should break up with him now. He's falling for you. You know he's falling for you. If you are certain that he isn't someone that you could see yourself with, or these aren't feelings you could ever reciprocate, you could ever feel as strongly for him as he is apparently beginning to feel for you, it would be cruel to continue to date him, to continue to hang out with him. You're kind of hanging out with him or dating him or having sex with him or staying over under false pretenses. He is investing in this relationship, and his expectation is that you are open to making a similar investment. If you know for a fact that that's not possible, you can't invest in him the way he's investing in you, you're not going to fall for him the way he's falling for you, the kind and decent thing to do is to end the relationship. If the only reason, though, you're considering ending this relationship is because you're gaming this out 10 years or 20 years and predicting or expecting that when he's 60 and you're 40, that he will have erectile dysfunction and not be able to fuck you and you guys won't have a sex life. There's a lot of sexually active 60-year-old guys out there in the world. That's not necessarily a problem. Who knows? After 10, 15 years together, you may have an open relationship and maybe about a different kind of intimacy. And you guys have sex with other people, but you have a partnership and a love and a foundation that transcends merely a hard dick in your butt. But if that's not a relationship, if indeed he winds up not being able to function sexually in 15 or 20 years, if that's not the kind of relationship that you would want to be in, yeah, you probably need to end this and end it now. And if you feel that way about older guys, please stop dating older guys. If every older guy that you meet and date, you think, going to be impotent in 10 years and I'm looking for something long term, well, then you probably don't want to date older guys. Not that older guys are all going to be impotent in 10 years or unable to get it up. If everyone bought one used item instead of a new item for a year, we would save 5.7 billion pounds of CO2 emissions in that year. That's like taking 500,000 cars off the road for a year. That's why I love and why you should support and shop at ThredUp. They are the world's largest online consignment and thrift store, and they are on a mission to get people to think secondhand first. With up to 90% off on-trend brands like Reformation, Ann Taylor, Kate Spade, Nike, and Free People, it's easy to stay stylish and sustainable on a budget and go easier on the planet in the process. Plus, ThredUp is offering Savage Lovecast listeners a special offer for an extra 30% off your first order when you go to ThredUp.com/Savage. That's 30% off their already discounted prices, and you'll be showing your support for the Lovecast while you're shopping. It's easier than ever to thrift with ThredUp. Save your sizes, your favorite brands, and you will get notified for great deals, and you will find the perfect items at the perfect price. Everything is triple checked by hand to ensure it's high quality condition. Some even have their tags still on. They add thousands of items every day, so there are always new treasures to find. It is all the fun of thrifting, but a lot easier and faster, and you can do it from the comfort of your own home. You won't even have to leave your couch. For a limited time, they're offering Savage Lovecast listeners an extra 30% off your first order when you go to ThredUp.com/Savage. That's on top of the already low prices, so hurry and take advantage. That's ThredUp.com/Savage. ThredUp.com/Savage for an extra 30% off today. Terms apply.
Hello, Dan. I was hoping you might be able to give me some advice. I need to figure out a way to make amends. So in college, I was an editorial cartoonist for the student-run bi-weekly university newspaper. Proposition 8 was in the news back then, and at the time, I was very close-minded about LGBTQ issues. I created maybe 3 cartoons or so that ended up getting approved by my editor and published, which looking back on now, I am so ashamed and so embarrassed to have my name next to. They were clumsy, mean-spirited, and terrible attempts at humor at the expense of queer people. At the time, the paper got a firestorm of angry letters and online comments in response to my cartoons. I was honestly totally in shock at the time at the strong public reaction, but it's part of what helped me begin to re-examine my beliefs and misconceptions. Since college, my understanding of queer and trans issues has definitely matured. I've come a long way. Today, I'd like to think of myself as an ally. At least I really want to be, but I can't stop thinking about my past. Not only about these cartoons that were published, but also some of the things I may have said or done that might have been hurtful or sensitive. I've had a cousin, a roommate, and a couple of friends from school that have come out in the last few years, and I cringe to think that I may have made them feel bad about themselves in any way, or made them feel alienated. I've contemplated writing a letter to the editor, to my old college newspaper, to apologize, but I really don't want people to then go back and try to find my cartoons in the archives and read them. I've also considered submitting new editorial cartoons with a better message. What do you think I can do to make up for my frankly ignorant and mean-spirited political cartoons? Also, just in general, what would you recommend for people like myself who have had their hearts and minds opened in the last few years and may now feel guilty about the way they may have knowingly or unknowingly hurt queer people in the past?
You're what queer people want from bigoted straight people. We want you to listen. We want you to reconsider. We want you to come around. You listened. You said some stupid shit in those editorial cartoons. People screamed and yelled at you. And you took that in. And it took some time, but it reached you. And you've changed. Stop beating yourself up. You did what we asked you to do. You are evidence. You are proof of the success of queer people engaging with bigoted straight people rather than just writing them off. And you know, some of that engagement probably sounded like people writing you off. People probably wrote in angry, condemned you, but you were mature and thoughtful enough, even in your ignorance at that time, not to wall that shit out, not to block it, but to listen and sit with it and reconsider. So what do you do with the guilt? You be a good and decent straight person and a good ally going forward. If you want to expunge some of the guilt, and I think that this is something you should do, people who knew you then, people you knew who were closeted in college, who may have seen the cartoons and been hurt by them, and it may have taken them longer to come out, at least to you, perhaps to others as a result of them, the result of those kinds of attitudes and the fear that other people in their lives and in their orbits, even if they hadn't made those kind of political cartoons, even if they hadn't made those kind of statements, might harbor them, harbor those attitudes, believe those same things. Yeah, to reach out to those people, to send them a letter and to apologize and just say, you know, this is going a long way back, and in a small way, this is kind of making it about me, and it's not about me, it's about you. I said and did these things at this time that I know now were ignorant and hateful and misinformed and potentially harmful to queer people, particularly queer closeted people. And you were a queer closeted person at that time who saw them. And I apologize if you saw this and were harmed by it. I know that you don't want the cartoons to pop up. I think if you really want to go that extra mile, writing a piece for your college newspaper now about those cartoons then, and addressing not the kid you were then, but addressing the kids at that school now, and telling the homophobes, telling the transphobes, telling the biphobes, telling the queerphobes in college right now that they should be careful about what they do and say publicly. They should be careful about the positions they take on queer people, because if they don't know and they say and do ignorant and hurtful things, they may come to regret it, as you have come to regret it. And your example could keep some bigoted fucking shitty college boy's mouth shut while he thinks about it, as opposed to what you did, which was to go off in these editorial cartoons, to run your mouth and do harm and think about it. You thought about it after you did the harm. You could reach somebody who may be thinking these same things you were thinking and hasn't given it a lot of thought. And your example could result in that person thinking before they speak and maybe getting a little bit more information about queer people and challenging, without having to be publicly challenged, their own biases or misconceptions or bigotries. You could do a lot of good. But you know what? All that's extra credit. Writing those letters, reaching out to people privately, writing for your student newspaper, reaching out to them, all of that is extra credit. What you've already done by coming around, by being a better person, by being the ally now that queer people need, even if you weren't always the ally queer people needed, that's enough. No one really has time to go to the post office. You're busy. Who's got time for all the traffic, parking, lugging all your mail and packages? It's a real hassle. That's why you need Stamps.com, one of the most popular time-saving tools for small businesses. Stamps.com eliminates trips to the post office and saves you money with discounts you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Post Office right to your computer. Whether you're a small office sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, or even a warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send it. Once your mail is ready, just hand it to your mail carrier or drop it in a mailbox. It's that simple. With Stamps.com, you get 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. Not to mention, it's a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. Stamps.com is a no-brainer, saves you time and money. It's no wonder over 700,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. Right now, my listeners get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Savage. That's stamps.com, click the mic, enter Savage.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling because I just feel like such a dummy. Oh my God. I have a sweet nephew who is in his early 20s, and he is my stepbrother's son, and I don't see him that much, and I totally forgot when I was talking on the phone to my dad that my dad didn't know that he was gay, and I outed him to my dad, and my dad is totally cool with it, but it was kind of a shock, and I felt so bad. I felt like I had kind of violated something, but I know for a fact from his mom that he is not closeted. He just has not come out to his grandparents. So I'm just wondering, like, what I should do or what I shouldn't do, or I don't know. I feel like compelled to maybe call his mom and talk to her about it and see. I don't know. It just feels like too involved. It's kind of like I've already overstep my bounds. My dad is totally willing to keep his mouth shut until, you know, my nephew comes out to him on his own. But I just feel like, oh, I just feel like I created a terrible situation. So anyway, do you have any advice for me in this situation?
You should feel bad, but you shouldn't feel too terrible. We're talking about an adult in his early 20s. We're not talking about a 13-year-old. We're talking about a grandparent who has no power or authority over this person. If you outed him at 15 or 14 to homophobic or potentially homophobic parents, that would be a huge problem. But when somebody is out to most of the people in their life, the people that they're out to can lose track of who they're not out to, and it's kind of a burden. There was a moment when I was out to my mom, but not my dad, out to one of my siblings, but not my other two siblings, out to some of my aunts, but not all of my aunts, and none of my uncles, when my mother, in frustration, told me that I couldn't keep doing this, that I wasn't really coming out to anybody. I was just pulling people into the closet with me, and it was getting confusing and difficult for them to edit themselves at all times around everybody else. My mother got really upset. I'm sure I've told this story before. My mother got really upset. I was in a play. My character got married. It was a comedy. My mother was bawling her eyes out because me being gay meant I would never get married. And my dad was like, "What is wrong?" And my mother couldn't tell him because I wasn't out. And I swore her to secrecy not to tell my dad. And that was that moment where my mother's just like, "You didn't come out to me. You yanked me into the closet with you. And it sucks. You're right. It sucks to be closeted. Please tell your father." A guy in his early 20s who's out to his aunts and out to his parents and out to siblings and everybody else, but not out to grandma and grandpa, arguably has pulled a whole bunch of people into the closet with him and is asking all of you to do two things at once: to regard his sexuality as no big deal and as something that you love and accept and embrace and that isn't stigmatized, and to keep your mouth shut at all time about it and be careful who you mention it in front of. And those things are kind of in conflict. So you screwed up. Call your nephew. "Look, I screwed up. I forgot that you weren't out to grandpa, and it just came out of my mouth talking about you just as a neutral and simple fact about you, which is, of course, what it is. And I'm sorry." Your nephew may be upset. Your nephew may be grateful. I'm from a huge family. Reached a tipping point where I didn't have to tell everybody because I let it be known that I was coming out to everybody, and then word spread. And this was many, many, many years ago, and it was a little bit more dangerous to be an out gay teenager at that time than it is now. And I was grateful that eventually I had some of the work of coming out taken off my shoulders, because it wasn't that I had to tell everybody. It reached a point where everybody knew, whether I'd personally told them or not. And I experienced that when it came to, you know, my 4,000 aunts and uncles, as kind of a relief. Hopefully your nephew will feel the same way. If he doesn't, and he's angry, hopefully he'll get over it in time. Hey, everybody, it's summer. Y'all keeping cool out there? And by cool out there, I mean cool down there. Because the only way to keep your gorgeous bottom cool is by wearing the very best underpants in the world. And those are, of course, MeUndies. Let's talk about comfort. MeUndies scientists spend countless hours in their underwear labs testing out the softest fabrics in the land, and the result is a micromodal fabric, which is a full 3 times softer than boring old cotton. Not only that, they have stylish, delightful, and unexpected patterns. Nancy and her whole family are wearing the sea blue boy shorts with frolicking mer people. New summer-themed prints drop every Tuesday. MeUndies also makes the softest lounge pants and onesies you've ever felt. I am so into those lounge pants. I get into them every night when I get home. If you haven't given MeUndies a chance or a try, you're going to want to try out, if nothing else, these lounge pants. And finally, now you can match with your dog with their new Buddy Bands dog collars, available in the same prints and colors as their undies. MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, when you purchase any MeUndies product, get yourself those lounge pants, take it from me. When you purchase any MeUndies product, you get 15% off and free shipping. That's 15% off a pair of the most comfortable undies or lounge pants you will ever put on. To get 15% off your first pair, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/savage. That's MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. My name is Christy, and I have a friend who is really struggling in the dating world because he wants monogamy, but with no commitment. Is this even a thing? He basically just wants to have a fuck buddy who only fucks him so he doesn't have to use condoms while he's on the side searching for the love of his life. I've told him this isn't feasible and that he needs to just buck up and use condoms, but that's not the whole point. He's still searching for that loveless monogamy a year later. So me and my friends are just curious what you have to say. Is monogamy without commitment a thing?
There's a lot of loveless monogamy out there, but most of it, depressingly enough, goes on within committed relationships. There's a lot of loveless marriages. There's a lot of loveless long-term relationships and partnerships where the folks are monogamous and they're committed and they're married or they live together and no one's breaking up with anybody and no one's going anywhere, but there ain't a lot of love there. There's a lot of masturbating inside or next to each other if there's any sex at all. But what your friend is seeking is unrealistic and self-negating. He wants loveless monogamy, so he wants someone to commit to him, to only having sex with him and no one else, so he doesn't have to use condoms. But he doesn't want to make a commitment, he says, because he wants to be able to search for the love of his life, with whom he also won't have to use condoms, presumably, while also this other person is fucking him and only him and has sworn to fuck him and only him so that he doesn't have to use condoms. Your friend is an idiot, and he either has to reconcile himself to using condoms with randos or casuals or his fuck buddies who will be fucking other people too, or he has to just have non-penetrative sex with the people that he's having loveless, casual intercourse with, who by definition won't have made a commitment to him and will owe him nothing but honesty. We owe each other honesty, even in the context of a casual relationship, even in the context of an anonymous hookup, we owe each other honesty. But what he's asking or what he's seeking here is unrealistic. And it doesn't sound like he's having much luck finding it. The time he could be investing right now in finding someone he could make a loving commitment to, a loving monogamous commitment to, and then not have to use condoms, he's pouring it into first trying to line up this person, this imaginary person who will commit to fucking him and only him and no one else so they don't have to use condoms, so he doesn't have to use a condom while he searches for the true love of his life. Yeah, that person does not exist. And your friend who does is an idiot if he thinks that person exists.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 29-year-old cisgender man. As far as sexual orientation, well, this is what I'm calling you about. I've always been attracted to women. I exclusively slept with and dated women until age 25, when I decided out of the blue that I wanted to see what it was like hooking up with a man. I found an objectively handsome guy on Grindr. When we met in person, what I found was that looking at him didn't really arouse me, and kissing just didn't feel right. I did discover, however, that I very much enjoy sucking cock. Through the past several years, when single and feeling horny, I've hooked up with several more men. I have not, however, found a single guy that I'm romantically or even sexually attracted to, beyond what's hanging off the front of his body. Which brings me to labels. The thing is, I kind of want to call myself bisexual. A number of my friends, including my roommate, are queer, and I'd like to be able to be a part of that community instead of just being a boring, hetero, cis male. I think I could classify myself as bisexual in the sense that I enjoy sex with both genders, but I also feel like it would be an affront to the community since I present as a hetero male and cannot see myself ever wanting to date a man. I'd like to think my friends would be accepting, but I'm afraid of coming off as a dispassionate jerk if I tell them I only really want the D. This fear has kept me more or less in the closet about my sexual proclivities. So I guess my question to you is occasionally sucking dick enough to get me the label of bisexual and thus passage into the queer community? I feel like I would need to be biromantic to be accepted, and that being bisexual alone just won't cut it. What are your thoughts, Dan?
There's nothing wrong with being a cis hetero male. You are not, however, a cis hetero male. You are what we now call bisexual, but heteroamorous. You are sexually attracted to and sometimes sexually active with both men and women, but you are only romantically attracted to women. Charles Blow, the New York Times columnist, has written about this. Other bisexual men are now writing about this, and bisexual women, that bisexuality doesn't necessarily mean you are equally attracted sexually and romantically to people of both or all genders. It is valid as a bisexual to have not just sexual desires and sexual orientation and sexual preferences, but also to have a romantic preference, romantic orientation. There are a lot of people out there who are having sex with men and women who feel like they're not allowed to identify as bisexual, even though they're sexually active men and women, because they're not romantically attracted to both equally. Well, that's bullshit. Robin Oakes, who's a bisexual activist, created a definition of bisexuality that is pretty popular and I think really nails it and totally covers you. Here's Oakes. I call myself bisexual because I acknowledge that I have in myself the potential to be attracted romantically and or sexually to people of more than one sex and or gender, not necessarily at the same time, not necessarily in the same way, and not necessarily to the same degree. That's you. You're bi. Welcome to the queer community, kiddo. And when you say you present as kind of masculine or cis hetero male, what is it that you mean by that exactly? You're not presenting as very cis hetero male when there is a dick in your mouth. I promise you. And there are lots of members of the queer community out there rattling around who might be perceived to be straight because they're masculine gay men or they're feminine straight women or they're bisexual and they're in committed opposite sex relationships. And people will assume that they're straight because they have no other clues or markers coming at them that might indicate otherwise. And straight is always the default assumption. If being the kind of person or if moving through the world in a way where people are going to assume you're straight, where the default assumption is going to apply to you, disqualifies you from being queer or identifying as a part of the queer community, there are lots of fags and dykes out there who can't then identify by that logic, by that reasoning, by your argument as members of the queer community. That's bullshit. Let that go. You sleep with men, you sleep with women, you suck off men, but you suck face with women exclusively. You are bi to a degree, and you are a part of the queer community in whole.
Hi, Dan. So I'm pretty kinky, and I talk to these guys who sometimes want to be, like, basically forced to, like, be fucked by another guy or maybe, like, suck their cock. And so I'm wondering, like, are these guys actually gay and, like, society is just telling them that, like, not okay to be gay, and this is kind of like their way of living out that secret life? Or, you know, is this like a whole nother thing? Obviously, I mean, I don't think it's possible to say that they're like completely straight if you heard about this phenomenon, read about it, whatever. Let me know.
I've definitely heard of this. This kink even has a name: forced bi. What's up with the guys into forced bi? Well, I think they're bi, but they want to be forced. I think it's all right there in the name of the kink. Absolved of responsibility. There are a lot of people out there who have sexual desires and sexual fetishes and sexual kinks and are turned on by certain sexual scenarios where they are absolved of responsibility, where they are taken against their will, where this thing that they want to have happen to them, that they want to do, that they want to experience, happens to them in this context where they're role playing because these guys are asking you to set this up for them. So they're setting it in motion. They are asking for it. But in the moment, they are able to pretend and suspend their disbelief that this isn't happening because it's what they wanted. This is happening because it's what you wanted. And they are only submitting to your will. Is that fucked up? Yeah, I guess that's fucked up. Is that rooted in homophobia? Sure, it's rooted in homophobia. But if the person isn't toxic about it, if the person isn't, you know, torn apart by self-loathing afterwards or lashing out at the people who set this thing up for him that he wanted to have happen afterwards, this is just the erotic imagination taking these powerful cultural forces and containing them and shrinking them and basically making it into play, making it into a fetish, making it into a kink, finding a way to slot it into this person's sex life in such a way where they can have their terror and their hangups that they have eroticized and then have this kind of sexual expression and sexual play too. You shouldn't pathologize it. So long as the guy isn't racked with self-loathing and self-hatred and doesn't lash out at you about it before or afterwards, so long as they can be conversant about what's actually going on here. I am into forced buy. I would like to, you know, role play a scenario with you where you bring in some other guy and you tell him he gets to fuck me in the ass and I don't get to say no. And of course, this is a ravishment fantasy, right? This is somebody role playing a quote unquote rape or ravishment fantasy, but he's in control of it. He's in charge of it. So long as he can talk about it in that way and talk about it in a way that sets you at ease, and he can acknowledge that this is his kink, this is his turnout, he's eroticized these fears, and he's turned on by this kind of role play. But it is just that. These are roles, and this is play. This isn't rape. You aren't forcing him to do anything, and he can take some responsibility for his kink, for his fetish. Not a problem. A guy who comes across as a psycho, who gets in there, and this was all set in motion because it's what he wanted, it's what he asked for, it was what he was seeking. And then before, during, or after, he angrily pins all the blame on you for what's happened or what he's doing and can't converse about it in a sort of zooming out to, you know, the wide angle lens, 360 degree view of it. That's not a healthy form of sexual expression. That's not somebody that you should engage in this kink or this kind of role play with. But a guy who can own it, a guy who understands himself and what's going on here, yeah, not a problem. And you shouldn't be any more reluctant to play with a guy into this kind of role play, into forced buy, than you would be to play with a guy into any other form of DS sex. You want to look for people who are healthy. You want to look for people who understand consent. And you want to look for people who take responsibility for their desires and what they're asking you to do with and for them. And somebody into forced buy is capable of taking responsibility for their desires as well. And somebody into forced buy is just as capable of taking responsibility for their desires as somebody into dom sub or master slave role play. We're going to take a quick break from your calls to talk about summer sex toys with Erica Moen, the cartoonist half of the team behind the weekly comic Oh Joy Sex Toy, which she creates with her husband Matthew Nolan and a whole bunch of other guest artists and writers and thinkers. And they are the duo behind the new and very terrific book Drawn to Sex: The Basics, which is a great and valuable read for the young people in your life and for anybody in your life. Hey, Erica, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for that intro. That was really lovely.
Well, I guess I have to thank you in full disclosure here. You dedicated Drawn to Sex, The Basics, to me.
Yeah.
Why would you do something like that?
Because it's your fault.
What? Explain. How is Drawn to Sex, The Basics my fault?
Because you got out there and started talking about sex in a fun, frank, mostly friendly way. And that was obviously a direct influence on what I now do with my life and how I pay my mortgage.
Well, I think what you guys do is really important. And I think you've made a huge contribution to sex education, not just of young people, but of all sorts of people and fully fucking grown people. And I'm such a huge fan. So when I opened the book and it was a surprise, I didn't know it. The book arrived and I opened it and I saw that you dedicated it to me and I about shit myself. So thank you.
Oh, well, you are so welcome. And thank you for everything you've done.
All right, let's talk sex toys. What do you got for us? What are your recommendations? What's the sex toy of the summer?
Okay, yeah. So I got the email saying recommend summer sex toys. And I was like, what is a summer sex toy as opposed to like a winter sex toy? And so I decided on something that would be like, wouldn't make you too hot and sweaty because the summer is already warm enough. So there's this Iroha Plus series by Tanga. And it is this set of three little clitoral vibrators. They all fit in about the palm of your hand. And they are beautiful. They're like little art pieces. And they are made of the softest silicone I have ever touched. It's like synthetic rose petals almost. But really, I don't want to say squishy because that doesn't do it justice. They're firm squishy.
Like a tongue?
Ish, but more pleasant, I think. Because like, if you're just going to reach out and touch somebody's tongue, like there'd be a bit of an ew factor. But this is just really indulgent, luxurious, soft, plush, silicone that is just, you have to touch it. You have to touch it to understand.
So how big is it? If you say this is a small sex toy that's just for your clit, how tiny is that? Are you talking about a thimble size sex toy?
No, I would say it's about the size of the palm of your hand. It would just fit perfectly. And they're each kind of, they're kind of modeled to resemble, not a perfect likeness, but to evoke the spirit of sushi. They kind of have these sushi cuts to them.
Uh-huh.
They're very artistic, though. So it's not like you look at it and you're like, oh, that's a piece of novelty sushi. It's more like, you know, when you order just the raw salmon and it's that bright, vibrant, pinky red color, and it kind of has that certain cut to it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is shaped like that. And then another one, I think it kind of looks like a cross between a clove of garlic and a humbao bun. And then the third one kind of resembles a little whale to me. It sort of like has this open mouth area and then this swoop and a bit of a tail. And they're all very organic shapes. They're all very, they look like they could be food items. They're very beautiful. And like, as far as like, will this rock your world? Well, I mean, they're kind of basic vibrators, honestly. They've got three speeds. They have two pulse rhythms, which is where toys will have these pre-programmed vibrational patterns. So they'll go like, duh, 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 duh.
Mm-hmm.
So they each have two of those. They're moderately strong. They're basically about as strong as a good bullet vibe, which, you know, that can be enough. They're not going to knock your socks off. It's not like an innovation in vibrator technology or anything. They're just like good, basic, solid vibe strengths and patterns, and they feel super nice.
Something pleasant and light and buzzy for the summer, like champagne rosé. So what is the sensation like? You can use it on your clit. Can you use it on the head of a dick? Can you use it on someone's nipples? Is it?
Oh yeah, totally.
Versatile?
Like it is external stimulation. I mean, and if you really tried, you could probably shove it in an orifice, but I mean, don't shove it in your butt because it doesn't have a what's that called? A flange?
It doesn't have a flared base.
Flared base. That's it. Yeah. It doesn't have a flared base. So don't put it in an orifice that doesn't have a natural cap on it. They're just not made for that though. So yeah, it's definitely external use and it's intended for clitoral use, I believe, but you could, who's to stop you from putting it on the head of your dick or put it on your nipples or wherever else you're sensitive.
And what do they run?
They are $140. So it's not the cheapest choice. Like if you just want a basic vibrator, you could go down to Babeland or wherever and get a $15 bullet vibe and you'll save tens and tens of dollars. But if you want a really luxurious, indulgent, fancy designer bullet vibe, you can spend $140 and get one of the Iroha Plus models.
Because your clit is worth it. Where can people find them online? Are they in all the big online woman-owned sex-positive shops, or do you have to go somewhere specific?
I believe they're in all the big positive woman-owned queer plus A-plus woke shops that you can think of. And you can find it at all those regular sex shops, and you can also get it online at tenga.co.uk.
Erica Moen, the cartoonist half of the team behind the weekly comic Oh Joy Sex Toy, with her husband Matthew Nolan. They are also the duo who brought out the terrific new book, and it's a terrific resource, and it's really hilarious, and it's dedicated to me, Drawn to Sex, The Basics, a great primer for anyone who's just getting started on sex or anybody who wants to brush up on sex, however sexually active they've been up to now. Erica, thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
Oh, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
All right, before we get to your response calls, I'm going to read your tweets. Sinsaj tweets, listening to your opening this week, Dan, and I just want to remind you that there's nothing wrong with fucking a porn star, and lumping us in with a list of reasons why the president is bad. Thank you very much for writing in, Sin. Of course, I don't think there's anything wrong with fucking porn stars. We are pro-porn stars and pro-sex work and sex workers around here. I was just trying to call evangelicals out on their hypocrisy, because until Trump came along, they thought there was something wrong with fucking porn stars. So thank you, Sin, for writing in and giving me an opportunity to clarify and contextualize that remark. All right. Jennifer tweets, really did not think I was a podcast person, but approximately 8 hours into Fake Dan Savage's hashtag Savage Lovecast, I am obsessed and actually excited as I still have 1,500 miles more to drive. Welcome to podcast listening, Jennifer. Glad you're enjoying the show. Hope those other 1,500 miles went quickly. And finally, Odd Thoughts tweets, at Fake Dan Savage, on your last episode, you asked for a universal pronoun. How about we take a cue from Australia and England and adopt cunt, arsehole, or geezer? Any of those perfectly describes just about every person on the planet. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. Made me laugh. Don't think it's going to catch on. All right. If you want us to potentially read your tweet on a future episode of Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, this is in comments to the woman who had the terrible family of origin and was lying to partners early on in their relationship. So I just listened to Dan's advice and it was pretty good. But what I was thinking she could do is just be honest about how you don't want to talk about it, and that maybe you'll talk to them about it when you build a certain level of trust and comfort, something along the lines of, I'm no longer in contact with anyone in my family of origin. And I don't mean to be dramatic or cagey, but it's a very touchy subject, and so I don't want to talk about it right now, but maybe I can tell you about it sometime later. And then what you're doing is you're just being completely honest, so you're not lying, and you're also being incredibly mature about it. And so if they blow up after that, or if they're like, oh, I can't handle that there's something that I don't know about you that early in the relationship, well, as Dan has said before, you tell them one thing about you, and then their reaction tells you everything you need to know about them.
Hey, Dan, this is Chris, straight black guy from New York, just addressing in 633, the 41-year-old straight cis guy who was ranting about pronouns. I'm really sorry, but you're just going to have to die mad about it. Like, I like being called black. People call me African-American, and just for the syllable. And it's not a big deal. You know, I just accidentally misgendered a friend that I've known for years. They corrected me. I said, I'm sorry. They forgave me. We moved on. It takes like literally 2 seconds to be corrected and apologize for something that's really nominal compared to the years that they might have spent enduring like abuse or, you know, staying their frustration forever, being pigeonholed into a category that they didn't feel that was right for them. You know, we as cis straight dudes really don't have any business being frustrated for stumbling over pronouns. Like, we've been running the pronoun game and the sex and the gender game for years. So just kind of take the L.
This is for the caller in episode 663 who was consternating about not feeling turned on at sex parties. I think you should keep going to those sex parties. Just like one-on-one sex isn't just about one thing, sexual pleasure, it can be about emotional intimacy or relaxation or fun or whatever. Those sex parties aren't just about sexual pleasure for you. I'm kind of the same. I like to go to dungeon parties, but I'm not really turned on while I'm there in like a wet, I want to have sex now way. It's more of an intellectual turn on. They stimulate and fulfill part of me. The people watching is amazing. The psychology of it is fascinating. And I just feel so good to be in a room where everyone is free to be the freaks they are. So keep going and just don't worry about being turned on in the moment.
All right, we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Give the gift of the Savage Lovecast. You can send the magnum version of the show as a gift to your best buddy or your worst enemy or your Republican uncles. Go to savagelovecast.com and click the green gift a subscription button. Also, you should be listening to Blabbermouth every Wednesday. It's a news and review show hosted by Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Eli Sanders. Rich Smith sits in, as do I, and a cast of other stranger writers all fighting about what happened over the last week. Check out Blabbermouth wherever you get your podcasts. Follow me on Twitter at Fake Dan Savage. Follow Erica Moen on Twitter at Erica Moen. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.